Do you feel like you need God's encouragement and wisdom throughout the week to take hold of His promise to fly like an eagle? You come to the right place. Welcome to Eagles on the Hill. Let's join our host, Pastor Jeff Scheich.
Hey, people, I am your host, Pastor Jeff Scheich. Thanks for joining us on this edition of the podcast. Today, we're going to talk about a sad subject. And that subject is grief. Actually, hopefully, by the time this is over, it will be an opportunity for us to learn and grow and how to deal with grief. And so to do this, I've invited a special guest, Benita Steinbauer, to come on with me. Benita is a works at Grace Point here in Lincoln, Nebraska, and she's a counselor there, a licensed mental health counselor. So, Benita, say hi to the people.
Hello. Good to be with you.
All right. All right. So, as you know, we have you here to talk about grief. So maybe what is grief? Let's define it, first of all.
So when I think about grief, we're talking about a natural process of emotional and physical response to something that is lost. So it might be a loss of a job, a loss of a relationship, a marriage loss, a job loss, a friendship change, loss of a dream. It can be any range of things, maybe loss of a home, change of a home. So whole range of different capacities that we will grieve because something has gone away and something has changed.
Which sounds like we'd be grieving every day, almost. Yeah. I mean, because there's so many changes and losses that we have in our lives.
Yes.
So it's important for us, because it's so prevalent, to learn how to deal with this.
Yes.
So thanks for coming on. And I've heard when I went to school years and years, it was many, many years ago, the five stages of grief. So maybe run us through those kind of briefly, and then how does that impact your work as you work with people and help them grieve?
So I had a couple come in, and they were in their 70s, and they had moved here from another town. And they came in, and they were upset because they were fighting more, and they'd never fought before in their life. And after a conversation, found out they had moved here from a town they lived in for 40 years. So they lost their community. They lost all those friendships. They were in a different house. The husband had been in a highly physical job and now was confined to a wheelchair. And he had just retired.
Wow.
So they were together all the time. And so after listening to it, I said, you know, it sounds like you're grieving. And it was like this light bulb went on that, to put a word to it, there were all these losses that they had had. And so the grieving process, when I think about it, it's a tool designed by God, and all of the stages have a purpose.
Okay.
So He's designed the grieving process for our protection, to help us grow, to heal us, and to help us draw closer to Him.
Okay.
So historically, there are different steps that we've talked about. Kubler-Ross originally came up with this. And so when I think about the different stages, in the first stage of a loss, and if we think about it in a death, is denial. How could this happen? Did this really happen? This is surreal. And the purpose of it is to protect us. So we go into a cocooning and a time of numbness so that we don't make rash decisions. We don't do things that are out of character because we need that time to just make sense of what has just happened. So our brain is trying to figure out how something that doesn't make sense can make sense. So the person was here yesterday and now they're not. And so our brain goes into overload. And so the denial and the numb phase is for our own protection. Then bargaining, it kicks our brain into another level of, if only I had, or if I could have, or I should have. It allows our brain to start processing and sometimes it is regret, and it's going to wanting to figure out how I could have prevented it, what I could have done differently. Mm-hmm. And then the third, these don't always go in order. And typically you'll go in and out of different stages at different times. But I think of the purpose of anger. So we have denial, bargaining, and then anger. Anger creates energy and movement. So if you think about when you're angry, you feel it mm-hmm. in here. And so it's adding energy to our system to do something so that mm-hmm. we don't get stuck mm-hmm. in the grieving itself and isolating. And so sometimes that anger comes out as just, I'm irritable and I'm angry about little things, or I'm angry at the people that are driving on the road, but it is the motivation to move to the next stage, to move on to something. And sometimes it's taking action in a healthy way, that now I'm going to advocate for something that related to the loss. And then the last one is acceptance. And it's really coming to a realization and the acceptance of, yeah, this did really happen. My life has changed, but it's not the end. Mm-hmm. And another stage that's kind of been added is redefining the relationship mm-hmm. with the person that you have lost. So we accept it, and then we still have a relationship with them, even though they're no longer here. Mm-hmm. If it's a divorce or a parent or a death, there is still that relationship, and we have to redefine what it's going to look like and feel like. And sometimes that's processing through complexities of who the person wasn't that we wish they were.
Mm.
Or
regrets, things.
Yeah, missing the pieces.
Yeah. And we wind up, I think you said, going back and forth through them. It's not like a linear progression. Yeah. Today I'm here, tomorrow I'll be at anger, and I'm going to be angry for 3 months, and then I'm going to go to the next one. They can all shuffle around even within a day, right?
Yes.
Isn't that true?
Yes, even in a moment.
Even in a moment.
And when we think about grief now, particularly with that thought of the linear, we think of it now as more like a pendulum. I grieve, and then I might have joy, and the two can coexist. Mm. And then I grieve, and then I may have contentment, and I grieve, and it's intermingled, but it's not one, and then we move to the next.
But eventually the pendulum comes to the center, and acceptance and redefining and all of that is the goal, right?
Yes.
So, mm-hmm. so as you work with people, so how do, adults, teenagers, children, do they grieve differently? And if so, how?
We look at developmental stages. So our capacity to process grief and loss varies depending on the developmental stage, emotional, mental developmental stage. So kids are very concrete. And so they take things at face value, and they don't have the language and a lot of times the conceptual processing to think through the context of things. Mm. Adolescents have big emotions, and they have a lot of stirring and are less likely to talk through. And you're more likely to see things in behaviors that rather than in conversations of how they deal with it. Mm. And adults, there's a bit more predictability, but we miss things sometimes in thinking that because they don't grieve in the same pattern, that they're not grieving.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly with adolescents, is the silence may mean they're not doing well, and the silence may mean that they are. Mm-hmm. And it's just trying to find ways to help them express. But when I think about with kids, there are four things that are universal cognitive components of understanding death. And so these are things that can be helpful to know when you're dealing with loss with children.
Okay.
And that is that death is universal. So we all die. Death is irreversible. Grandpa died and he's not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Non-functionality. So when someone dies, their body stopped working. So instead of saying grandpa died of heart disease, that doesn't make any sense.
Sure.
Grandpa died because he had a sickness and his heart stopped working. So the concreteness helps them.
Mm-hmm.
And causality, that there's a reason the body stops working. So helping them know in concrete ways that grandpa died, he's not coming back, he's in heaven, he's with Jesus, and this is why, this is what happened. And then kids will have questions,
mm-hmm.
particularly, you know, the closer the person was, kids have questions about, you know, will this happen to me?
Right.
Will this happen to somebody else that I know?
Mm-hmm.
Was it my fault? Because they can sometimes make connections that really, in our minds, aren't, you know, are somewhat nonsensical.
Right, right. And yet, and the temptation is to, well, maybe you can tell me what you should say. That's why I got you here. But, you know, they'll say grandpa dies. Well, daddy, are you going to die? And to say, well, no, that's not going to happen. Well, that's, so what do you say then? Mm-hmm. What would you recommend?
Mm-hmm.
And that, just to use that one scenario.
Mm-hmm. The better response is, you know, someday I will, and I hope to be around for a long time.
Mm-hmm. So to be open and honest about that.
Yeah.
Someday
we'll all die, and I hope to be around for a long time.
Right, right, right. It doesn't seem like it's going to be today or tomorrow or next week or next year.
Right.
No. Yeah. And then, of course, how about teenagers? So that was, I think we just talked about little kids for a while. What about those, you know, 10 to 20-year-old, or maybe we've got to subset that out, but tell me about that.
So teenagers, particularly males, if they are experiencing grief and if it leads to depression, it will come out more likely as anger.
Okay.
And so we ask teenagers, groups of teenagers, what are things that you want adults to know about your grief?
Okay.
And here are some things they said. Let me talk to you and others about the person who died.
Mm-hmm.
So don't avoid it.
Right.
Even though time passes, it sometimes feels like the death happened just moments ago.
Mm-hmm.
I get angry easily because the death has changed me. And I'm entitled to feel angry and sad at times.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, normalizing the emotions, and don't make me talk about it, but give me the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Don't avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
I get distracted in class by thinking about death. I feel guilty for many things. I love the person who died the most. Or I am doing better than most adults realize.
Mm. So a whole spectrum of things there.
Yeah,
really.
A whole spectrum of things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I usually recommend for particularly teenagers, but young ones as well, if parents are concerned, to then go to counseling. I mean, it's, yeah. You know, to have somebody else that the child can talk to be able to talk things out, because they may feel more comfortable saying things to somebody else than their parent, and it would help them get through that time, right?
Right. And sometimes they don't want to talk to parents because they don't want to make it harder for the parents.
Right, right.
And same with the parents. The parents shouldn't be leaning on the kids, so they need somebody.
Right.
And the kids may need somebody that has complete objectivity that they don't have to take care of.
True, true. Whereas they feel like they're trying to guard and protect their parents' feelings.
Yeah.
So they don't say things, and yeah. They need to have that neutral person they can unload on.
Yeah.
And like you say, not take care of, not worry about. So that's great. Uh-huh. That's really good advice.
Yeah.
Anything else that you were hoping to talk about grief in this in the brief time we have? Obviously, there's lots more to say, but anything else you were hoping to get in?
I think it's realizing we grieve lots of things, mm-hmm. and that's normal. So to normalize that when I lose a job, I might be hurt, I might be angry, and to let the feelings be what they are, mm-hmm. don't fight them, but look to make sense of them, and then find comfort that it is a process. We don't know how long it's always going to take because it's different for different people. Mm-hmm. But you have to, there's a saying, you have to heal it. You have to feel it to heal it. Okay. And if you try to run from it, it will catch up with you.
Eventually.
And it might be 2 years, and then it looks like out of the blue, I'm depressed. Mm-hmm. So it's work, and it's tiring. It can be tiring, but it's therapeutic because the one thing I've learned the most is we are not meant to grieve alone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a relational activity. It's a community activity, mm-hmm. and it allows us to experience the comfort of God, the healing of God, the healing of community. And it's important to draw people in to it and not to isolate from it.
Mm-hmm. Great, great. Well, Vanita, thank you for coming on the show today. We want to let you know that you can get a hold of her or other counselors at www.relationalhealth.org, relationalhealth.org. And you can contact Vanita there. Or, of course, you can always contact us at eaglesonthehill211@gmail.com. And I can certainly pass along a message. So, Vanita, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right. We'll see you soon.
Blessings to you.
All right. Bye-bye. So remember as we close that those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength and soar on wings like eagles, even in the midst of grief. God is there with us and promises to work all things for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose. So trust in the Lord in all your ways. Acknowledge him and you will fly on wings like eagles. Thanks for joining us.